find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, LeaderShield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at Parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day at the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series, yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
With Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back about 5 minutes into hour three. Christophe is still dealing with the shed row, so we will see whether we get to him today or not, but we will do our best to get a tribute to Alec Head in. The visit that is upcoming, and Todd Pletcher is a go for later. We'll talk to him near the end of this hour, and a little Tony Black and a little Rich Eng, too. But right now, Tom Law is standing by to give this is the Saratoga special final preview before you're going to actually have Saratoga specials in your newsprint stained hands. Just weeks away now, and everybody's getting excited, and the demands on Tom's time and Joe Clancy's and Sean Clancy's and everybody that works so hard to get the special out on a near daily basis all summer long. And really, it's here, Tom. Good morning.
Whew, it's here. 3 weeks from today. Can you believe it?
That's true, right? That's true.
Yeah, three opening days.
The 14th.
Weeks. Yeah.
Wow.
I think. I got the math right, right? Yeah. I was by the office, by our spot, checking things out, getting ready to move in, and getting all the particulars all set up. You know, Joe's working behind the scenes to get the internet and the TV turned on. I'm going to get a nice TV wall mount, so we'll have the TV so we can sit in the office and watch the races while everyone else is enjoying them while we put out the paper. But yeah, we're excited, and we're ready to go. Year number 22 for Sean and Joe.
Amazing.
And yeah, me, I've been
you're
doing
in the
that since 2013.
You're in the same,
yeah.
Are you in that? You're in that same building?
Yep, right there on East Ave, right across from the Oklahoma, right next to Phasic. So our nice, great location. We can't thank Phasic Tipton enough for putting us up. It's been a great working relationship with them, and for some great sponsorship of some content that we're going to have this year. The stable tour. Speaking of, you're going to have Todd Pletcher on. He's one of our favorite stable tour guests every year. Always fun. I was actually spent a little time with him yesterday out at the Oklahoma track. popped in his office to talk to him about a couple things related to various projects that we're working on for the HBPA and the New York Breeders and everything else that we got going on. So it's a busy time of year, but, you know, as you know, Steve, it's kind of the best time of year for sure, especially if you're in Upstate.
Are you going to have membership in the clubhouse behind you, the new consternation source? I've never seen such carrying on in my life over nothing. I don't think we've discussed this on the air. Because you must have a front row seat, right, to what's gone on.
Well, I guess we kind of do. I mean, because we're there, you know, we're there for kind of the busy time of year. So I guess we fall into that, you know, that building that we work out of, it's not ours, obviously. But, you know, we're there during that busy time of year when I guess these guys that want to build this property, build these structures, they want to be there at that same time, too. You know, I've kind of thought about it and, you know, there's been a lot of growth and a lot of changes in Saratoga over the last, you know, in the 9 years now that
We lost you for a second.
Oh, sorry. So, there's been a lot of changes in Saratoga, and I mean, I guess this is just another one, a change. I've gone back and forth about what my opinions are on it. I was actually thinking about it the other day, and I thought, if the neighbors have a complaint with it, you know, it's already kind of a busy, it's already a busy part of town in the summer, and if this is going to be something that is basically going to sit unoccupied and not busy for 10 months out of the year, that sounds pretty good to me, but... You know, I'm not a neighbor there. You know, maybe I'd feel differently if it was going up next to my house. I don't know. I don't think I necessarily would. But where I live, there's a older apartment complex that's kind of right nearby. And kind of my biggest concern is always like, is that eventually going to be sold, and then they're going to put up some ugly mixed use retail building, which they tend to seem to like to rubber stamp and approve here in Saratoga. You know, and I'd have that. And I'd be more probably concerned about the endless amounts of construction on my little tiny street that goes in back of my house. But, yeah, so, that whole situation, I mean, I'm a little ways away from it. So it's close to me. I mean, I'm 3/4 mile away. But, it's, you know, it'll be right next door to the track. We didn't notice anything last year. We worked in our office. And I guess, you know, there's another building that's sort of a clubhouse that's right near there. You know, it doesn't really have any impact on our lives. So,
well, for those that are wondering, and you'll see it more clearly when you come to Saratoga this summer. That construction that was going on, just you know, off of East, essentially that big open parking lot area behind King's Tavern is what we're talking about, and a group of owners and prominent you know, prominent owners that have property, they basically built a, you know, essentially a call it a clubhouse, for lack of a better. There's a pool, and it's going to have you know, it's going to have activities till 11 o'clock at night. I mean, for all intents and purposes, it's not that different, really, than the way Ciro's is situated, you know, in the right there on Lincoln, and you know, tucked in there. I mean, there's houses around that. How different is it from the Horseshoe, where there's, you know, houses on either side of the Horseshoe, and those are open until what? Till 2 a.m. But there's some neighborhood concerns that have been cropping up about this. And look, if you're only worried now about over gentrification of Saratoga.
Yeah.
You're about 25 years too late.
Exactly. Yeah, I think one of the main concerns was, I think there was some, one of the proposals kind of had elimination maybe of one of the little streets that's around there. So I think some people that have property there didn't want them, that street to be kind of eliminated. There's a couple little streets that kind of go off of East Ave. One of them kind of runs behind the Hall of Fame. That's right there. But
yes.
You know, I think they can amend those proposals and whatever. But yeah, you're right. I mean, there's other businesses right near there. I mean, there's King's Tavern. They obviously have some concerns about parking issues and their own business, but also, you know, the Brook Taverns right down the street, and the Horseshoe, like you mentioned, and there, you know, there's obviously a lot of businesses in and around that little area that you know, have continued to operate despite any restrictions. Yeah,
it's one of those, you know, it's one of those things that yeah, it doesn't affect it doesn't have a widespread effect. I understand. I can understand. You know, if you're in the neighborhood, and I understand. But at the same time, your property is worth three times or four or five times what it normally would be without the racetrack, and so you know, the 7 week. If it's a, you know, if it's a 7 week,
eight.
Yeah, eight. Exactly. I don't think you got a lot to complain about.
Yeah, agreed. You know. Agreed. Now I will say it's going to eliminate. It'll change. You know, I don't know if it'll change all that much, but if they did eventually make some changes to that sort of that corner there, that Union Ave, East Ave corner, you know, George Street, all that whole area. You know, parking. And there's a lot of people that park there. And I think they're going to lose, you know, Naira's going to lose some parking themselves with the new chute that they're building. So you're going to see some, you know, maybe just some, you know, maybe subtle changes to parking areas, you know, if you end up with the loss of some of that off-site parking and then the loss of some of the on-site parking, you know, that'll have a spillover to other places. I mean, that should be probably pretty minimal, I would think.
Well, I mean, I don't know if this is a speculation that is misguided or not, but those open fields, and there was our friend that had the party, the one right behind that open lot that is, and I'm going to forget his name that owned that property. I assume he still owns it, but he used to have a party Traverse Eve every year. And I mean, at some point you'd have to think that all of those open lots, whoever owns them, I can't believe that the parking revenue would be more long term than selling those lots for development. I mean, at some point there's going to be development on those parcels, and
you would think so.
You know, that right? Am I crazy thinking that?
Yeah, I think you would think so. I mean, there's the, you know, Phasing Tipton actually has bought a few of those small parcels. You know, they built that new barn behind the old feed store building, which is where they put us in the summer. But they also bought like a little smaller track that's kind of right next to it that has a house on it. You know, there's a few other empty lots, and they're, you know, I think they wouldn't mind adding a little bit more if they could. You know, parking is always an issue for them as well for the sales. But yeah, that lot, that it's funny, that lot that's directly next door to us, you know, as you know, Steve, just driving through town, it just, all those lots, it just kind of like sit there the whole year. And I wonder the same thing, like you. I'm like, how much money do they make? And we it's funny, we sit there and look at it sometimes when we have a few moments to just kind of like, let's think about something else for a few minutes, and we go out and look at the parking lot. How many cars are in this parking lot? They're charging $25 today, and, you know, how much do they make today? You know, we try to estimate it and then multiply it by, you know, 40 and then try to see. So it's these are the mind games we play with ourselves. This is how we stay fresh, you know, in the summer. That's how the content is so good, because we're distracting ourselves with mindless stuff that is irrelevant. But it's all part of the process, you know?
Too funny. Too funny. Is there anything
eating you can do, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Tom Law with us, and this is horseracing.com. In fact, why don't we, probably a good idea, because the next time we talk, it's going to be Saratoga opening week. Awesome. Let everybody know, Tom, what the plan is, especially for those, you know, who can't be here, that won't make it to Saratoga this summer, how they can view the issues on the dark days when there's, you know, you guys do handicap, the handicapping grid. Let everybody know all the ways that they can receive the special and basically get everything they're going to want out of it.
Absolutely. So we're going to do 20 print editions of the special during the season. We'll do an opening day, which is Thursday, and then we'll come back and do a Saturday edition. We'll do, and then from there on out to the end of the meet, we'll do every Wednesday and every Saturday, in addition to about 6 issues in a row, starting on Hall of Fame Day, which is the day before the Whitney, all the way through the end of the select sale and kind of leading up to the New York bred sale in Saratoga. So that comes to be 20 issues for the 40 days. You can sign up, get an email into our system through our website, thisishorseracing.com. You can get a digital edition. You'll get an email basically every night. Once the issue is finished, you'll get, we send out an email blast to our subscribers. That way, you can download them also from our website, thisishorseracing.com, which also has an archive of all the specials, actually going back to 2007. We're working on some digitization of the 2001 to 2006 years. I'm kind of working on that. That's like a good off-season project. I think we've actually uploaded some digital ones from about 2007 to 2010 recently, so we're getting there. But you can go back and look at all the old issues. And then you mentioned on days that we don't publish, we are going to continue to kind of put up content on our website. That's, again, thisishorseracing.com. We put content up there, both related to kind of previewing and covering the races and or sales or other events in town, but also we do handicapping. So you'll be able to get John Chapazian's picks on every day of the whole race meet. We'll do those on almost every Thursday, with the exception of opening day, which we're doing a print edition. But you can get the picks on Thursdays, Fridays, and Sundays when we don't put an actual paper out. So you can follow along there, which is great fun. I know a lot of people eagerly look forward to our handicapping battle that's in there. I'm looking forward to it myself. So that's I think I covered it all. And like the paper is available both in the barn area. We kind of have a distribution team that kind of puts them out at the track kitchens and hands them out in the barns, and also kind of hand delivers them to people that are maybe hanging out at the track, at the rail, at the Oklahoma, or on the main track. And then also we have several paper racks on the front side, both in the grandstand and clubhouse, kind of near the escalators and kind of by the big, large mutual area outside where you do your show sometimes, and throughout the grandstand, and then also all around town. So you'll see our paper at Price Chopper and Hannaford and Stewart's and Henry Street Tap Room, and different bars, different restaurants, coffee shops, Saratoga Coffee Traders on Broadway and Uncommon Grounds and places like that. We have a few other hard standing paper boxes that are green, and they have these stickers on the side that say Saratoga Special. We have one kind of by Ben and Jerry's, and a few others kind of by the farmer's market sometimes, and here and there. One of them's right near King's Tavern. We mentioned King's Tavern, right, kind of right there. So chances to get the paper, a lot of chances, and the digital, people are reading the digital edition. Our readership has grown in that in the last 5 or 6 years. So we've seen a sharp uptick in that. Obviously, we had the digital only back in 2020, the pandemic year. But then we were happy to come back with the print last year and print and the digital. So it's worked out well. We've kind of gone to a pretty good system of 2 issues a week. And our readers seem to like it. You know, people always ask us for more. We're willing to do more. We get some good sponsors. We want to sponsor the Thursday edition every week. We're game for it. So give us a call.
Oh, that's a good idea. There you go.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's you know, it's not, it's a free, everybody has to remember, it's a free newspaper. So it's, but it's not free for us to put out. So we're looking forward to it. You know, won't be long before we have the first one. I know I was talking with Joe and Sean the other day and kind of making our plans for when they're going to arrive and kind of figuring out our team and our staff and when everybody's going to start. And it's really right around the corner. So I'm kind of getting my last licks of summer, what I call my summer vacation, which basically is from the end of the Belmont until the start of Saratoga, getting a little time away this weekend. So
nice. Well, yeah. Are you all set with the interns? They all lined up? Is there room for anybody if anybody's interested?
Yeah, you can always give us a shout. You know, we're sometimes we end up a little bit light in terms of staffing towards the end of the meet because depending on who our interns are.
Go back to school.
And this year they go back to school. Yeah, we got one guy who goes to Marquette and another guy who goes to Penn State. So they start, like, you know, towards the Alabama time. So we end up with that 2 weeks at the end where we're a little bit lighter than usual. If we have people that are more local or maybe they go to colleges in New York where we can kind of keep them. So we are a little bit lighter towards the end. In that way, usually we can kind of shoehorn it together with some contributors that we have, guys like Paul Halloran and Terry Hill and various other guys and gals that'll be on hand. So, but yeah, we're ready. You know, we've kind of streamlined everything in the last few years, streamlined the staff and streamlined the additions and, you know, but the content we're expecting, hopefully the same quality that our readers have gotten used to. And I know we're excited to get it rolling. So,
very nice. Well, everybody, for those, there'll be every year there's people that discover it for the first time, the Saratoga Special. Yeah. And this is horseracing.com, Tom Law and the Clancys, as well as, you know, ever-changing cast that digs
really
up every interesting part of Saratoga.
Well, that you mentioned that ever-changing cast. I mean, it's you know, we're very blessed to have our advertisers that are very faithful and loyal to us and support us, and we appreciate that. Our readers, you know, I mean, we can't do it without the readers, and really we couldn't do it without the staff. And you know, our list of interns, and it's really the best internship in all of horse racing, in my opinion. I was thinking about it today, just thinking about the people that have gone on to such great success. You know, I don't want to tell people that it's a guaranteed spot in the thoroughbred industry after you work with us, but because it's not, nothing's guaranteed in life. But it certainly gives you a good leg up. You know what I mean? Sean and Joe have built such goodwill in the industry over the years that I think it carries a lot of weight for people that have worked for us in the past. You know, I've seen it transform my own career. How people respond to me when I talk to them about stories and try to set up interviews with people, that Saratoga Special name really carries a lot of weight. And it's not anything we take for granted. We're going to keep trying to work on it and work hard and kind of, you know, do the name proud. I mean, somebody like you can relate with what you've built and how you've fostered it and nurtured it over the years.
Well, it's such a unique scenario to have a virtual, you know, almost daily newspaper that just conveys. It has a magic way of conveying what being at Saratoga feels like,
yeah.
And that's thanks to you and the Clancys and their.
Yeah,
just all the way, the columns and the, the features are, it goes beyond just simple agate and capping and reporting the results.
Mm-hmm.
It's much, much more than that. And one thing, Tom, that it's done. I mean, and I know there was that book that was the first, 5 years. It essentially serves as a, especially in light of less mainstream media coverage, and of course we do get more coverage in the Capital District than most racetracks would get at any time anywhere. But I suppose other than Louisville and Lexington and the Herald Leader and the CJ, but the fact that it's sort of a ongoing record of these 20 plus seasons, that's a thing about it that is fascinating. It'll serve as a as an archivist essentially Saratoga.
Yeah, that's big to me. I can remember when I was writing at Thoroughbred Times, and I would write. I was going to write the main story about the Derby, and I remember thinking like how much of a, I took it seriously. It was a very big deal. I thought maybe in 50 years or 60 years, somebody's going to go back and read this article and be like, this is like the history, like when you go back and read, just the old archives from the Thoroughbred Record or Blood Horse or Daily Racing Form, the old racing manuals, things like that. That means a lot, and for us to do that for Saratoga, I know that they keep a copy. They have bound volumes, and they have some other loose copies of every year of every issue here at the Saratoga Public Library. And Akima Library has a set every year too. It's pretty cool to think about that. That maybe someday when we're long gone, Steve, people are going to look back and be like, "Wow, look at these guys were doing."
Exactly.
You're writing about horse racing in the newspaper. Yeah. What's a newspaper?
What's a newspaper?
Yeah.
Saratoga TL, everybody. Tom Law. Tom, best to everybody getting ready. Enjoy the 4th, and we will have probably a live conversation next on opening week.
I'm looking forward to that, Steve, and I'll see you soon, even though I've seen you a little bit, and we're not far apart. So I'm looking forward to seeing everybody, and it's going to be good to be back in Saratoga again.
There it is. They'll all come here. It's like Mecca. Tom Law, everybody. Let's stay right here because we've got a little less than half an hour. Tony Black for a few minutes to kind of wrap up the first half of the year. And he just sent me actually a picture off of that conversation. He was listening in to Sid Fernando, and Lassie Deer comes up. Just craziness. And I did mention, I said, Black Type won a couple of stakes. Yeah. With Tony aboard, unbelievable, at Keystone. So we'll talk to Tony for just a couple of minutes, and then at about, call it 11, about 11:42, Todd Pletcher. We still have got Belmont to Belmont congratulations to offer to Todd, because we haven't, last week he was traveling. So we'll talk to Todd. Meanwhile, while we wait for Tony, I can tell you from yesterday's draws, I mentioned the Mother Goose and the Chicago. We already discussed what Thistledown has got for the Ohio Derby and that Lady Jacqueline and the rest of those cards. The Mother Goose, speaking of Todd, he's got that interesting Shahama, which we'll ask about. He's got Shahama coming out of the Oaks, and Flavian Pratt rides back. This is the Mother Goose, so from the rail, Shahama. From the rail, Venti Valentine out of the Oaks, she ended up 14th. It did not go well, but she, was essentially stopped in her tracks and never had a chance to really restart. And that So Venti Valentine regrouping. Midnight Stroll. Midnight Stroll, the Terra Nova Gatsis, Randy Hill. Not this time, Philly. Last seen in the Black Eyed Susan. Gerrymander for Chad and Seth Klarman. The Into Mischief coming out of the Eight Bells. And that was her seasonal debut. And she kind of ran, you know, evenly. So she's got a chance here to impact, you would think. And then Juju's Map from Brad Cox and coming out of the allowance win on the Oaks card. That was the undercard performance where she ran well. A good way to get her season started. And this for the All-Boss, the Liam's Map Philly. So Shahama, Venti Valentine, Midnight Stroll, and Gerrymander, and Juju's Map, the Mother Goose, and then the Chicago, the 7 furlong for the Phillies and Mares, and some very nice ones in here. Brad Cox with Frank Fletcher's Lady Rocket coming out of the Ruffian. She was an okay third in there. She cuts back a furlong. Penny Baker, kind of a new face, a Godolphin runner that won the Heavenly Cause at Laurel. Byerness for Cherie coming out of the Roxlana win. Quite good. Bell's the one. The wonderful Bell's the one. And you can't have her run without Sconson and Four Graces. And then Steve Asmussen runs Calypso back, the Rockingham Ranch Brody's Cause Philly off of a Memorial Day sprint win at Lone Star. So a nice field of 7 for the Chicago being run for the first time in Louisville. And then there's also the turf sprint I told you about at Monmouth, the Goldwood. Tony Black, good morning. Quick visit.
Good morning, Steve. I'm sitting in my driveway in my car. I just got that picture of Lassie Deer. I went down to my mother's. It's pouring rain in here. Couldn't even walk 5 doors down. Pouring rain.
Oh, jeez. Well, I wanted to catch up with you. That was funny how you were listening when Lassie Deer came up.
Yeah, you know, you don't forget those horses, especially when you rode them for a guy like Del Carroll. He was just a great guy to ride for. Always had quality horses. You know, I rode for some really great trainers, and he was one of them.
Well, and that, you know, there's only... How many years did Keystone, was the Keystone name on the track?
Geez, I think it was for probably about 8 or 9 years. Then they changed it to Philadelphia Park, and then it was another. Then it was another 8 or 9 years. I'm not sure, but then it became Parks, and now it's Parks Racetrack and Casino.
Well, this was a funny discussion with earlier with Sid, and the minute I said that about Keystone and I realized Dell, it's sort of in the back of my mind, it rattled around that you, sure enough, you said I wrote her. I was like, there we go. I knew. I had a feeling.
You don't forget those horses. You know, I rode horses for Frank Whiteley. You don't forget those guys and those horses, like Suede Shoes. I wound up riding her and winning some stakes on her. And I was talking about Frank Whiteley the other day. Every horse he saddled, he left the undergirth so loose, you couldn't even ride the horse with the undergirth that loose. And he used to do it on purpose. He'd say, can't cut these horses' winds off by over-tightening that girth. So every jock used to just slide the overgirth back and tighten the undergirth. And that would be the only way you could ride those horses for him. Nobody rode those horses with the undergirth loose. In fact, one old rider come up to me one day and he says, whenever you ride for Frank, make sure you tighten that undergirth. And you never took it to the paddock to get it tightened or the assistant starters. You just tightened it yourself.
Well, Tony, explain what you mean and how can you do it, you know, from the saddle.
See, there's a girth that connects directly to the saddle billets, and that's the undergirth. Then there's a girth that goes over the top of the saddle and connects underneath the horse's belly, and it's called the overgirth. Well, the overgirth is a girth that you can slide back, you know, when you're sitting on the horse, slide it back, and it exposes your billets and the undergirth. And then you just pull the undergirth up on both sides. because Frank Whaley would never tighten. He said, oh, they constrict the horse so much it'll stop him from being able to expand his lungs and breathe. And that, you know, I guess he never knew it, but there wasn't a jock that rode the horses with the loose undergirth. Because you could roll that saddle right off their back. And the undergirth does the best part of the job, it's the biggest part of the job, for stabilizing the saddle and keeping it tight against the horse's withers. The overgirth is just an added protection.
And Tony, this is something I think we discussed this once years ago when there was that saddle slipping incident that Kieran McLaughlin suffered with I think it was Uptown. I think it was up. Was it the Uptown Charlie? Was Uptown Charlie Brown, or who was it? Who was that horse that he had that where the weight pad fell out, and the horse had to be disqualified because of course it didn't carry the full amount of weight, the whole way around. But we have not really ever discussed this much. And how many times in all the mounts you've had, how many times has a saddle slipped significantly on you?
You know, not a lot, but I was one of those riders that if I was out there watching the horse be saddled, you know, I would know if they tighten the undergirth. And that's what really stabilizes and holds the saddle, the undergirth. And I had some slip. I'll never forget one day I rode Candy Eclair at Monmouth Park, and for some reason the saddle just didn't sit right, and we didn't have what they call a chamois underneath the saddle, which a chamois holds, it creates more friction between the horse's withers and the saddle, and it slipped right up her neck. I wound up winning the race, but I probably didn't look real good on the horse because it's very uncomfortable when you take a hold of a horse and the saddle slips right up. Now that's really uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable also when you leave the gate and you push out of there and the saddle slips back. But I had a habit, and it was just part of my routine when I got up on a horse's back. As soon as I left the paddock, well, I'd rock the saddle. You know, my feet would be in the irons, rock it left, rock it right. And I'd always pull the overgirth back and check if the undergirth was pulled up as far as it could go. And most of the time, those elastic undergirths, when they're taut, will hold a saddle on really well. But there are certain trainers you got to know. Frank Whiteley was one of them. He would make the valet drop the undergirth down on its side, on the valet side, and he would drop it down to the middle. And as soon as you got on the horse, you knew it. You just didn't put much pressure in your irons because you didn't want to slip it up before you tightened it, or you didn't want to slip it back. But as soon as you got to the racetrack, just so he wouldn't know, you pulled both sides up, and those saddles most of the time would be tight, and you never had to worry about slipping. But a saddle slipping is a dangerous situation because it could actually roll underneath the horse's belly, or it could rock right up her neck. And when it goes up their neck, it can roll right off. So you had to have that undergirth tight to stabilize the tension on the saddle.
It's funny that you mentioned this about cinching up the overgirth, and that Whiteley. Todd Pletcher's on next, and I'm going to surprise him with that question, actually, and because it's something that I've never asked a horseman about.
Well, you know, I'm mentioning Frank Whiteley, but there was a lot of trainers, you know, in hurrying and saddling the horse. You know, the valet would pull his side up, the trainer would pull his side up, and if they felt it was too taut, they would drop it back down. But Frank Whiteley was notorious. He'd make the valet, he'd say, drop it down on your side a little bit, and then he would drop it halfway down on his side. And there was no way you could keep that saddle on the horse's back, or maybe once in a while it would be an extremely large horse, and dropping it down didn't cause a lot of problems. But it's real easy for a jock to understand how to tighten that undergirth without taking it to the paddock or to a starter behind the gate. You just pull the overgirth back and you pull the undergirth up on both sides. And that eliminated the problem. You know, but some trainers have it in their mind, that undergirth, when it's too tight, it constricts them. They can't expand when they're breathing. And that's BS. They're laughing. Their lungs are a lot stronger than elastic girths. The girths aren't leather girths. They're elastic girths, and they're made to you know, expand as the horse expands his breathing and chest. But, you know, on some horses, you just have to get an extremely small girth, and they make shorts. And you get a short undergirth. But most horses, the average undergirth will fit them when put up properly.
Tony, I'm going to pull up because I want to get Todd in for the last 15 minutes. But great to talk, and thanks for a great first half of the year. We'll be back in about 2 weeks plus.
All right, you take care, and we'll be thinking about you. Get Todd Fletcher on, and I'm sure he tightens the girth properly. He wins. You can tell him what Frank Whiteley used to do, but, I'm sure he's You take care, Steve. I'll let you go. Bye.
Thanks, Tony. Tony Black, everybody. And wanted to get Tony in. We'll get Rich Ang for we'll get Rich in for tomorrow. We can do some handicapping, actually. Of course, we've got Los Al getting going. A couple of things as we wait for Todd. And I mentioned those maiden specials today. Indianapolis tonight, actually. The sixth race, Michael W. McCarthy, a Todd Fletcher alumnus. Fragrant. This is a Eclipse La Penta Ellen J. Foxwoods Gainsway $310,000 Classic Empire Filly that was bred by China Horse Club out of Flatter Me With Roses, which makes her a half to Merneith. That caught my eye today. She's a first-time starter, 6-1 with Chris Landeros. That's one of the babies to watch out for. At Presque Isle today, just so happens, Tim Ham has got Worldly Beauty, the 7 in the fourth race. The race at Indy is the 6th, by the way, 9:15 tonight. 2:51 today, the fourth race at Presque, a maiden special, going 5 furlongs. There's a commissioner, speaking of Todd Fletcher, a commissioner filly, Tim Ham sends out, bred by Trackside Farm, Tom Evans, Worldly Beauty. This is a half to Toby's Heart, caught my eye. And finally, how about today at Churchill, 6:56 tonight, the Twilight Card, 5 furlong maiden special, Tolson. Steve Asmussen, a Mulholland Springs bred that they've got with Lee Levinson, LNN. This is a full to Maximus Mischief. And then how about Savacco for Town and Country, Brian Lynch. Speaking of Toby's Heart, a half to Lone Rock and to Gerrymander, actually, by the name of Savacco. So some nice pedigrees and some nice two-year-old action today. Todd Fletcher joins us for his celebratory visit. I guess we got to start. You won the Belmont a couple of Saturdays ago. Congratulations.
Thanks, Steve. Thank you.
not only did you win the Belmont, you ran 1-2. I mean, obviously that was the optimal result. I suppose the optimal result would have been a dead heat.
Yeah, that's, of course, what I was rooting for. But I thought both horses ran terrific. And, you know, the filly, she was a little unlucky at the start and then kind of got bottled up and had to wait until Mo Donegal cleared her to get out and make her run. So, I thought she ran terrific.
The key question, everyone that knows the Rags to Riches story, did you have to buy a new set of binoculars last week?
I did not. It's funny the way that my first thought, like watching the race, was as soon as she broke, I immediately said, "Oh man, this is exactly like Rags to Riches." You know, it was, and watching the head on, and you know, she also not only did she stumble, but when she got up, she got bumped a little bit by Rich Strike, yeah. and so it kind of compromised her getting a good position and. Or actually, I take that back. We actually, Jose, I thought, did a great job of recovering and getting exactly to the position we had talked about. It's just she had to work a little harder to do that than if she would have broken cleanly.
I made the case, and I mean, it's really probably not even worth asking, but I will anyway. Maybe I'll feel better because I keyed Nest. Do you think if you swap the trips, or at least swap the positioning in the stretch, that Nest has, you know, probably if they run it 100 times, she wins her share of it?
Oh, yeah, I think you could certainly argue that. I mean, the thing you don't know for sure is just, like, how much Mo Donegal had if she got to him, you know, if he was going to find a little more. So it's one of those things we'll never know. But she certainly showed why, you know, it was the right move to run in there, and that she belonged, and that she stayed the mile and a half, and all of the things that we thought she would do. I think she proved that she's capable of that.
How much, and maybe this is probably something we could discuss in greater depth in a, you know, kind of a you know, a This Is Your Life Todd Pletcher moment, but how much of this three-year-old seasonal development, how much of this are you getting to be, you know, kind of a Woody Stevens mentality about identifying a horse at some point, you know, either in their two-year-old year or early in their three-year-old year, and you say to yourself, you know, this is a horse that's going to appreciate Belmont?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's something that we're always thinking about, and in Ness' case, she was obvious to us. I mean, we started her out at a mile and a 16th. Pedigree screamed that she would run all day, and, you know, we had to make that decision to nominate her to the Triple Crown in January, which we did, and when we did that, it was all about the Belmont. We weren't thinking that we were on the Derby trail with her, or even looking to go that way, or you know, the Preakness. When you nominate to all three races, and the Belmont was the reason that we nominated her then. So she was sort of on that radar early on. And Mo Donegal, to me, you know, that wasn't as obvious early on as it was to when we, like, got into the Remsen, and then, you know, the way he finished in the wood, that gave us the hope that he could stay the mile and a half. Again, I think if you go back to his Derby, it was a better race than it looked on paper, and I think he was compromised by the one post, and, you know, ran a race that was close enough to being good enough to win. Just, you know, a couple things didn't fall his way along the trip.
You mentioned the Remsen, and we should probably fold in Nest's win in the Demoiselle. You would think, Todd, that at this point in the year, when we've dealt for a certain period with a lot of criticism and sort of this undue harsh judgment of the Demoiselle and the Remsen, mile and an eighth, two-year-old standards, you know, in not just in New York, but in, you know, in the sport. And doesn't this fly in the face of all of that, you know, that assumption that horses that win as two-year-olds in the mile and an eighth, well, they're going to be slow plodders? I mean, it's quite something, actually, that they both exit that weekend and that trajectory, and, you know, are separated by a couple of lengths here in a classic at 12 furlongs.
Yeah, I mean, I think it says a lot about maybe the renewed quality of the Demoiselle and the Remsen. And if you look back 2 years ago, Malathat wins the Demoiselle, wins the Kentucky Oaks, champion three-year-old filly. Hmm. Ness, certainly, you know, top of her division. And now you look at Don Agenda ran in the Remsen, comes back, wins the Florida Derby. Mo Donegal wins it, comes back. And now I think what you got to really look at is, do we need to put the Wood Memorial back as a grade one? Now you've had the Belmont winner, the Preakness winner come out of the wood. So, you know, I think we've reestablished some real quality at some of these aqueduct races.
Well, a unbelievable result, and obviously you could have only, other than a dead heat, you could have only won with one of them. You now have you know, won this thing four times, and a couple of other just harrowing misses, and you know, there's going to be plenty more Belmont starters from the Pletcher camp. Let's touch on a few other things that have that went on that last week and then into this week. Of course, Fearless won the Brooklyn. That was a very good performance. You know, Malathat, you mentioned that Ogden Phipps. Any other time, Todd, you know, that would have been the highlight of the entire weekend. That incredible performance, really the top three finishers in that Ogden Phipps.
Yeah, I mean, it looked on paper to be possibly the best race on the card. And I mean, the depth and quality of fillies in that race was sensational. I thought Malathat ran super, just, you know, missed a tough head bob, and so it was you know, it's a deep division, and all the major players were in there.
Well, and plenty of things to look forward to, and including, of course, coming up toward Saratoga and Personal Ensign, all the, you know, fairly predictable sets of races coming forward. Let me also get in a couple of other licks. You want to talk about a fabulous race that, you know, nobody necessarily was thinking the Salvatore Mile. By the end of the year, we might look back and say that was one of the top five races of the year. But, you know, this Mind Control has been really a lot of fun. I imagine for you, he just keeps turning in quality efforts.
He's such a cool horse, and you know, he's a really fun horse to train. He loves what he's doing, and comes out every day with great energy. And you know, he's a super looking horse, and just you know, if you look at the race at Parks last fall and the Islands past weekend, you know how courageous he is, because in both of those spots, he looked like he was beaten, and he wouldn't be denied. He fought back, and it was super fun to watch.
How much benefit does a horse in that kind of a circumstance, you know, having run in the Grade One 7-furlong sprints, and you know, and he ran okay in both of them. He picked up minor checks, but then stretching back out to the two turns, and this is a formula that's actually worked for him. You know, previously, you look back to that Parks Dirt Mile last fall, coming off of the Forego.
Yeah, I mean, it was a similar pattern, and you know, there, unfortunately for him, the race at Churchill, it just, Jackie's Warrior is such a good horse, and if you have any chance to beat him, you need someone to put some pressure on him early on. And you know, when he got away with Soft Fractions going 7 furlongs, there was no way anyone was going to catch him. And so, you know, that race was just essentially a throwout, and his race first off the bench in the Carter was a good performance. So we felt like he was rounding into form, and you know, as he's gotten older, I think he's appreciating a little more distance as well, and I think further.
Well, the Brunetti family, of course, and also Sal Kuman with Mattaquette that came in along the way. Mind Control, in an absolute thriller, and of course, A Son of State Thursday, which only you know, further enhances Todd's influence. All right, now you forget all of that. Forget the Belmont. Nobody cares anymore. What about this crazy filly? What was that on Friday? Money's Gold. What? You got to be kidding!
I tell you, I don't recall having one run that fast in her debut, and seemingly did it, you know, without having to be urged too much. So. Yeah, she looked, you know, we knew she was quick, and she'd shown speed in all of her works, and it had some solid gate drills, but you know, there's just no way you can anticipate one's going to do what she did and win by almost 15 lengths going 5 furlongs and 56 and change. It's just, you just don't see it very often.
Well, what about a 101 buyer? I mean, we all went scurrying to our buyer notebooks to figure out the last time of no, people still, they haven't even found the last two-year-old filly to to have a 101 debut by her.
I know it was. They were scrambling for some stats there.
Pretty funny. We should also mention Major Dude's win, and there was also the three-year-old. That was just a New York bred, though. Nice. Let her inspire you. You're obviously, you know, the two-year-old season just 3 weeks away at Saratoga, so there'll be a lot of that to look forward to. How about anything in the next couple of weeks? I'm on vacation, so what are we looking at? You got anything special?
You know, we hope to. We've got a few more names that maiden 2 year olds that we're gonna be running here, you know, before the meet closes at Belmont and Saratoga, as you said, is right around the corner. Got hopefully some for the Belmont Derby with Emmanuel and Annapolis and Grand Sonata, and of course Life is Good gonna come back in the Nayrud on July 2nd. So yeah, it's an exciting time.
Nice.
Especially you know, I think we've got a strong group of 2 year olds. It seems like we're off to a good start there, so that's always exciting.
Well, and Shahama on Saturday in the Mother Goose.
Yeah, we kind of went from one extreme to the other, from the far outside in the Kentucky Oaks to the inside here. But she's trained well since the Oaks, and I think that form kind of flatters the Oaks field, which at the time everyone said was one of the strongest ones in a while. And I think Shahama kind of ran sneaky good in there. When you look at the ground she closed late and was still running on at the end, so... We've been pointing for the Mother Goose since then. Hopefully she can make a move forward in there.
Best of luck. Todd Pletcher, thanks so much as always. We'll see you in a couple of weeks at the spot.
All right, Steve, thank you.
Todd Pletcher, everybody, got a jump. They may have taken it from us already, but if not, we'll talk to you tomorrow. Weekend preview at the races ahead of summer break. Thanks, everybody.
With Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts.